You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to this Times Higher Education podcast special focusing on the 2016 THE Asia University Rankings. This year, our list of the best universities on the world's most populous continent has been expanded to include 200 institutions from Turkey in the west to Japan in the east. The results will officially be unveiled at the THE Asia Universities Summit, which is hosted by the Hong Kong University of Science and Technology from the 21st of June, and we'll bring you the top 10 on this podcast in just a moment, of course. Today I'm joined by rankings reporter Ellie Bothwell and rankings editor Phil Beatty. Just before we get to those results, Phil, 200 institutions this year, that's double the number that we've had in previous years.
That's right, yep, we've been able to expand the rankings dramatically this year for one key reason. We have more data. We brought all the rankings data in-house for the world rankings last October, and this year we've been able to provide a much deeper and richer ranking, so it's a wonderful opportunity. We now have 22 countries making the top 200 list, so it's much more inclusive and we can get a much deeper picture.
Indeed. Just to run through those top 10 institutions, as I promised. At number one, the National University of Singapore. Joint second place, Nanyang Technological University, also in Singapore, and Peking University, China, of course. The University of Hong Kong, Tsinghua University, Hong Kong University of Science and Technology, the University of Tokyo, Pohang University of Science and Technology, and Seoul National University complete. Ellie, what is a very East Asian top 10?
Yes, that's right. And this year's ranking really shows sort of the way that Singapore has sort of risen in the university arena. So it's got the top two places for the first time in this ranking. Sort of one of the reasons I think for Singapore's rise is just that, you know, the fact the government has invested a lot in higher education. It's been very, very strategic in the way it's funded the higher education sector. The universities are also sort of highly internationalised. And also the country has a very strong sort of school system, which probably impacts on its university sector as well. Mm. Yeah, as you say, it is a very sort of East Asian strong list. And that's true for sort of the top half of the table, really.
Mm, but not all of those countries are investing the same amount that they used to. Japan, which historically has always been very strong in this list, has just one institution in the top 10 this year. How does it look elsewhere for this nation?
Yeah, I mean, Japan sort of isn't performing as well as it has, as you say. I mean, it does have, you know, almost a fifth of the universities in the list, so 39. So it does still have sort of strength and depth, and it has the same number of representatives as China. But China has far more in the top half of the list than Japan. And like you say, Japan, you know, the University of Tokyo is its top institution, and that's in seventh place. At one stage, it was at the helm of the list. One of the reasons for that, I think, would just be, you know, Japan's had to make sort of serious funding cuts over the last sort of couple of decades, and China has been very strategic. It's, you know, pumped loads of money into its universities. It's got several initiatives. That's not to say the Japanese government, though, aren't sort of, you know, trying to invest in higher education, and they have a kind of a new scheme to try and make their institutions more internationalised. So, you know, this trend might sort of change a little bit in the future.
Of course, we will be updating this list next year as well. It is one of our regular sort of stalwarts of the THE ranking stable. Phil, you mentioned methodology at the start, the increase to 200 institutions, we've got more data available. Are there any other sort of tweaks we should know about this year in terms of how that data is being used in order to produce this list?
Yeah, we have actually changed the methodology slightly this year. In the past, we've really just been running this as a filter of the world rankings. It allowed us to go a little bit deeper. It allowed us to expose more information on universities lower down the rankings or that didn't make the top rankings and the overall world ranking. But this time, we've listened and reflected on some feedback we got from the Asian region. In particular, we've reduced the weight we give to reputation. There's a strong sense of feedback that a lot of these Asian universities doing very well are younger, they have far less of a legacy, they have less expansive alumni networks, so they feel that reputation is less relevant. If you think about, you know, Hong Kong UST, it's only 25 years old this year. There are many institutions doing well, POSTECH in Korea, KAIST in Korea. There's lots of, and Nanyang, actually our new number two. It's a very, very young institution. I think that's 25 years old too. So reputation is reduced, which I think is right. We're focusing more on the harder metrics, on the more immediate, less subjective metrics. And then accordingly, we've also given a slight increase to our third mission aspect, the industry income. Mm-hmm. Universities in Asia are particularly respected as drivers of economic growth, and their ability to leverage private funding from business and industry is something we've slightly increased. So it's the same overall formula as the World Rankings, 13 indicators, but with a slight modification, especially for Asia, based on the feedback we've been getting.
And we should, of course, bear that in mind when making year-on-year comparisons. The deeper data, though, has meant many things. One of them is a glut of countries being represented in the Asia University Rankings that haven't previously made this list. So the likes of Bangladesh, Indonesia, Oman, Qatar, Jordan and Pakistan all make these Asia Rankings for the first time. We've heard a bit about East Asia, Ellie. How about elsewhere in the continent? It seems maybe a bit lower down the ranking, but some progress being made.
Yes, definitely. So, yeah, we can definitely see, you know, more representatives from South Asia and the sort of Southeast Asian region, as well as the Middle East. I mean, yeah, as you said, you know, most of these sort of nations aren't sort of, you know, going to be appearing at the very top of the list yet. They've kind of got their own challenges, and in many cases, you know, their governments don't have as much money. But yeah, we can sort of see which ones are sort of starting to emerge. India, which you know, has made this list in previous years, has far more representatives, but also Bangladesh and Pakistan are appearing. In the Middle East, sort of Israel is sort of one of the top, probably, in that region. Mm. It has six universities now in the top 100. So, yeah, I think just extending to, you know, to 200 institutions just really allows us to kind of shine a light on some of these other nations which haven't been appearing previously.
Absolutely. I mean, all the analysis is online for these rankings. You'll find it at www.thewur.com. We also have a dedicated student site these days. That's at timeshighereducation.com/students, where we'll be further delving into some of those top institutions from a student point of view. Phil, the rankings themselves are being released this year at our Asia University Summit. It's quite a prestigious event this year.
That's right, actually. It's an opportunity to bring together thought leaders and university leaders from across the world, but with a focus on Asia. We have 31 university presidents speaking at the summit. We have the president of the world number one university, Caltech, in Pasadena in California. We have the president of Asia's number one university, who I'm delighted to confirm today is National University of Singapore, and many other contributors. So it's promising to be an absolutely outstanding gathering of thought leaders. Really, in the 20 years I've worked in higher education, I've never seen such a prestigious gathering of higher education figures. So I'm incredibly excited to launch the rankings there and to delve into the data and to discuss leadership of excellent world-class universities beyond the data.
And what can we expect next? Obviously, the World University Rankings usually drop in the autumn. We've got all this new data available to us. What does the timeline for the THU University Rankings look like over the next few months?
Well, the great news is, as we've invested very heavily in our rankings and data capacity, we are able to produce more analysis. So actually, the World Rankings, you're right, they're coming out in the fall, in September. We'll be moving from six broad subject areas into eight subjects, so we'll be ranking at the finer grain subject level. We're developing some work now at 31 subject levels to get some analysis there. We'll be going deeper into regions. We're looking at national rankings, and of course we're consulting at the moment on our first ever domestic ranking, a US ranking focused less on research and much more on student engagement, student outcomes. So there's an awful lot going on, and it's a really exciting time for THE in terms of its data capacity and its ability to go deeper than the standard rankings and to get some really interesting new insights.
Thank you, Phil. You can find information on all of that if you go along to timeshighereducation.com, where you'll also find a rankings tab. Click that for all the latest data sets from the THE World University Rankings. If you want to comment on any of the things we've discussed today, you can find us on Twitter, both at THE World Uni Rank, where we're talking, as you might guess, about rankings, and also at Times Higher Ed, where there's more general discussion about the world of HE. But that's all for this THE podcast special on the 2016 Asia University Rankings.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.